shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Dave Scatine on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with it as well. S&P futures up 11. Dow futures up 110. NASDAQ futures up 49. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I am fine. Nothing like a good night's sleep to make a guy feel better.
I was reminding, watching that Irish game last night. I don't think you were ever part of this, probably because you had better sense. But your friend... Bill Hake and I, and we always had a couple other partners, but usually it was Billy and me. We'd go to all the hockey games, and we would sit right behind the opposing goalie and torment the poor guy like all night long with the operative
word. I do recall attending a few games like that, and you had other partners in crime as well.
We would do everything we could to research the guy, like his name. Where he went to high school, and of course we'd have try to have his biography, and we would immediately start yelling that he was a sieve. And he'd always be turning around looking at us, and we'd always duck so we couldn't see who was yelling at him. Anyway, it was great fun, you know, college stuff.
It was great fun.
But
some of those hockey games were some of the best sports entertainment during our time at Notre Dame, especially. When they had Eddie Bumbaco and Ian Williams.
Yep.
I mean, guys now, you know, if they score 15 goals, that's a pretty good season in college. It seems to me Eddie had something like 46, you know. These guys were just, flashy skaters, good shooters, good finishers. And both of those guys broke the WCHA scoring record that year. Ian never held it because Eddie broke it first. Ian went past the old record himself. And WCHA in those days was teams like Wisconsin, Denver, Michigan State,
Minnesota Duluth,
Colorado College. It was a really good college. It was the premier college hockey club.
Well, it was that, and it was the Ivy League. Those were the two. Pretty much.
Yeah, there wasn't. I don't think it was Hockey East, but there was also like a ECAC that had some good teams.
I think it was just the Ivy League. I mean, it was those teams. I mean, maybe somebody else wiggled in there.
I don't think so, but we could look it up.
I mean, let's put it this way: that was the name of the league. Now, whether they let somebody from the area in because they had nowhere else to play, the answer is probably yes. I don't know if they were all Ivy League schools, but I remember the name of the conference was the Ivy League, which is odd. But Boston College was in there, right? And they're not Ivy League, but anybody can.
Right.
It was more of a Northeast League, for lack of a better term, wouldn't you say? Eddie was a flashy skater. Ian wasn't a flashy skater, but you couldn't move him out of the middle with a bulldozer. He was a strong man.
And they had a center, a fellow named John Noble.
Yeah.
Who was nothing but a setup man, and he was really good at it.
And his wife.
Really slick with the puck. And so he would, he would just feed those two guys, and they scored like crazy.
And his wife, who was a looker, not that I remember, she played the organ. And let's just say that if you were a referee, even though he had two in those days, when the organist started playing Three Blind Mice after a penalty, it didn't make him happy. Just saying. Some people.
So hey, I just pulled it up. It was the ECAC, but it included the Ivy League teams.
Okay,
included also Boston College, Boston University, Providence, Northeastern, schools like that.
Well, back when
the Beanpot teams too, all the Beanpot teams were in it.
Well, back when the shall we say places were open. For lack of a better term, one of the, I won't say toughest tickets to get, but one of the toughest bar stools to get at the Tripoli Tap was the Monday night where the Beanpot was played. And, cause Nick always had that feed because he's from Boston and he loves hockey, and the place was always packed, and that's a really good tournament.
Oh, it's an outstanding tournament.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what do you mean?
Yeah, because it's all grudge matches, you know, which is what's really great about it is, you know, they're all local teams. And
local grudges.
They all desperately want to beat each other. It's not a friendly tournament.
Yeah, nothing's better than a local grudge, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love a grudge match, man. Those were the best games, you know. I don't care what sport I was competing, you know, what the competition was, how old I was, or anything like that. A good grudge match is a wonderful thing.
We had a, just talk about a weirdo story before we get into this. A potential relief bill I want to talk about here, because I don't think anybody's really had a chance to dig through it, and I was digging through it last night, and I figured it would be interesting to people. We played a tournament game out in Mount Greenwood, and it was a spectacular game. It ended up being 2-1. It was one of those times when the first game we played, the wind was blowing out, so we beat these guys like 15-9. In the second game, the wind was coming in a little bit. And we won 2-1, and it was one spectacular play after another. And it was the interesting part, Kevin. I always remember those guys. They brought in one ringer, right? And they had a really good center fielder. This ringer could really hit. Ringer is such a bad term. An additional player, shall we say? And so it turns out that they put that guy out in center field, and even though he did get a couple of hits, he made the error to cost him the game. You know, because they sat their really good center fielder who was a light hitter, and which was probably, at the end of the day, was probably not the right idea. And interesting part is, you know, it went absolutely right down their wire. And so years later, Dr. J and I were helping this family out. We weren't part of any firm or any consulting thing or anything, but they asked us for help. And it's a long story, and it didn't end well, not because of us. But so they decided to go with these consultants. Because the guy bought one of these dot bomb back when if you just bought the one guy buy flowers.com and then sold it for $1 million like the next day or something? I don't know what he did, but there was all that stuff going on in 1999, right? And so anyway, if you went whitehouse.com, didn't you go to a porn site or something? Then the White House
might have been.
Didn't the government have to, like, to buy the site from somebody? Some really bizarre stuff. Anyway.
Probably really had to strong arm it, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, so this guy, he was a Southside softball player, and he was this consultant. I didn't really like this group at all, this consulting group, and neither did John. So the two of us are sitting there kind of grumping. And then the guy goes, oh, yeah, I used to play softball, Mount Greenwood. And I go, what team? And he goes, OB Joe's. I said, yeah, you're the guys we beat that playoff game. The guy goes, yeah, you guys suck. this had to be like 15 years later. Like the wound was still open, shall we say? And I loved it. You know, just I loved it. So there. Anyway, we have a.
You're just not a very nice person.
No. Well, when it comes to that, I mean, you know, you got to. That's where the competition's supposed to be, right? Then Merlin Olsen was the nicest man probably that ever walked. And there's a guy, talk about a disease he died from. You know what he died from?
What?
Mesothelioma. He worked one summer in high school helping out pipe fitting guys. He died from it when he was, 70?
And that's where he got it, huh?
Yeah. You know who else died from that was, same story as Johnny Ladner. One summer he worked as a helping pipe fitters. There's one that can sit in your body for, 40 years and then you get it? I mean, it's...
Yeah, it can be. I know it has a long dormancy time before it fires up.
And there's nothing they can do in the meantime or check to see if it's there or anything like that. It's really weird. Anyway, a lot of people that you would never even guess have died from that, and it's a horrible disease. Oxygen all over the place, and it's not good. Anyway, we have this. Everybody's fighting about this stimulus package now, and we went from $2.3 trillion, right, which is the Democratic side's salvo. And then there's this, where do they find bipartisan lawmakers? There can't be many of those. So anyway, a bipartisan group came out, and I've yet to see who's not, and I haven't dug far enough, but there's a few people on there that claim to be bipartisan. They came up with a $908 billion plan. All right, so Senator Pelosi and Schumer basically bleep canned their $2.3 billion plan, trillion-dollar plan, and said this thing is, I don't know what's going on in Washington, this is what I'm reading. They said we can use this as a starting point. So they essentially came down from $2.3 trillion to $900 billion. $2.3 trillion was a pipe dream to start with, but so now they're starting here. So then McConnell said, no, this is no good, I'm at 500. And I'm just kind of walking their way through as to what that would mean to people. And it would give, this is, now this is what people think is in the bill. There would be no $1,200 checks. Now, I don't know what these programs are. The pandemic unemployment assistance versus the pandemic emergency unemployment compensation. What in God's name is the difference? But anyway, they're set to expire at the end of the year. And that's, one of them is the extra money they're giving the states to extend the amount of time you get any, unemployment. That's all set to expire in 3 weeks. So according to this $12 million, I'm going to quote this. I'm going to say who wrote it. It's actually a pretty darn good article. Carmen Reinicke. Reinicke.
R-E-I-N-K-E?
I-C-K-E.
C-K-E, Reinicke.
Yeah, and she's a writer for CNBC. I've read some of her stuff before. She does a pretty nice job. And so evidently, 12 million people would lose their unemployment benefits the week after Christmas if nothing's passed. That's the deadline for the however many months it was the federal government extended the states, okay? So that would not be good. It also would mean that for 42 million student loan borrowers, monthly payments would resume in January no matter what, whether you're unemployed or not or whatever. So that wouldn't
you
be good.
You want a BATPL resume?
Yeah, yeah.
They're just going to default, but they won't resume.
Right. And also, it appears that instead of getting the $600 extra per week, you'll get $300 extra. So that's one of the different plans. So not only would your unemployment benefits in the state be extended, you'll get $300 per week. All right. So McConnell's proposal would also extend unemployment insurance, but for a shorter time. Under his plan, PUA, which gave independent contractors and what's a gig worker? Gig worker benefits. What's that, like somebody who does music and stuff? I don't know. Gig worker? Would be extended.
Could be, yeah. If you get a gig, you get benefits. I don't know.
It would be only extended for 1 month. I don't know what 1 month does anybody, because this, I don't know, this disease is out how many years now? We're not talking months anymore. So that would be extended for 1 month and then be phased out.
No, that 1 month should do a lot, because the incoming President Biden has promised that he's going to have a grand economic recovery.
Well, it depends on which side of the car window you look out, I think. But essentially, he would want it to, he'd jump it to the next presidency. So you are correct, Kevin, is really what they're talking about. Which I don't think is makes all that much, you know, hurt. But there's all kinds of stuff in here. State, local, and tribal governments, $160 billion. We're talking about transportation, which is airlines, airports, buses, transit, and Amtrak, $35 billion. There's child care. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in here. Housing assistance, student loans, education, I mean, you name it. In regards to the PPP, there's going to be, we'll give small businesses more loans, and they're going to be, it's going to be like half as much. So if you got $100,000 the time before and you still qualify, I guess you get $50,000 this time. McConnell's plan would allocate $333 billion to the program, with $257.7 billion going towards second draws of PPP. An additional $20 billion would reduce the revenue loss threshold from 25% to 35%. So in other words, you won't have to prove that you lost 35% of your revenue with the COVID. It'll only be 25%. And then another $40 billion would help frontline businesses, such as restaurants and personals. Can you get help if you're already out? If you're already out of business, if you already locked the doors? I don't know about that. And $15 billion would go to a grant program for shuttered live venues and theaters that have sustained significant revenue losses. So there you go. The first round, PPP approved more than 5 million loans. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
So that's what these guys are essentially fighting over, but it appears your $1,200 check is off the table. And The eviction and foreclosure moratoriums are going to expire at the end of this year if this thing doesn't pass, because it's going to extend that some. I don't know what to think about that, Kevin. I mean,
I'll tell you in part what I think about it, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before, is that it's really kind of simple. In many cases, the big problem with the eviction and foreclosures right now is that so many state governments are failing to deliver the benefits that people already qualified to get. And just because I stay tapped into Wisconsin, having lived there once upon a time, I'm pretty familiar with that. They still have a backlog going back to March of people who have applied for unemployment benefits and have not received them. And the government is just so dysfunctional. They sent everybody home, stopped doing any work, and then they claim they're handling all of this stuff on a best efforts basis, but they're so far behind and so incompetent. That if they just took care of that backlog, they would handle the lion's share of the rent and foreclosures and those kinds of things. But we're just about the point where it's too late.
Well, Kevin, as you know,
thank you, Evers administration.
Well, I pride myself on being this. Let anybody be involved if they're competent. And you know what? I'm changing. Like right before my eyes, this COVID is. I don't know if it's dug up parts of my mentality that I never knew were there or what. I tell you what, I don't want whatever it is now. And I don't know who this means. Solomon couldn't be the guy if you made him emperor. You've got to, as soon as Biden picked his COVID team, and he's got two ladies and a guy on there. The minute I saw that they were like lifer people from other states. That have never missed a paycheck. I don't care who they are. I want them off. And there needs to be one or two people there that are not sucking at the government trough. There has to be. And if you talk to somebody from the state of Illinois or Florida, as Carl talked about, I think it was his daughter he talked about. If you talk about a state worker that gets paid every friggin' week, no matter what, whether they do anything or not, and their idea that, hey, so what, Kevin, if your daughter, we gave her $15,000 in October. So what if she had to wait for April? She's whole. No, she's not. She's living under a tarp.
Yeah, get her out of my basement.
Yeah, she's living under a tarp. Her credit score is horrible. And by the way, how do you not eat for 6 months and all of a sudden have a big meal and you're good to go? I mean, it's not the way the world works. There's absolutely no thought of timing. There's no thought of what this all means to people. I mean, it doesn't appear to just be part of the public employee knowledge system. You know,
they don't understand the idea of serving, and in far too many cases they don't understand it. It's always about leadership. So I'm much more inclined to pin this on leadership in among government employees rather than the employees themselves. Because if it weren't tolerated, it wouldn't happen. It drives me nuts that it's that way, but that's the way it is.
It happens over time, Kevin. When we started PTI Securities, we were all floor traders, right? We didn't know anything about a retail securities firm. Fortunately, we hired somebody who did. He eventually whipped us into shape. The first couple of guys that came for the audit from FINRA, well, they weren't FINRA at the time, it was NASDAQ, NASD, sorry, and a couple of guys from the futures side, they saw us, they saw we were traders, they saw we were trying to do the right thing, and they came over and said, no, you idiot, you don't do it that way, you do it this way, right? And the people who came to do the audits were experienced people, mostly male, but there were a couple of females, experienced people. And the idea was to make these guys who were honest to start with not screw up and screw anybody else up. And they helped us tremendously. And as 30 years have gone by, the people have gotten younger, dumber, maybe not dumber, but less experienced. And now it's all about gotcha. It's a for-profit. And these people get paid by giving people fines. It's a for-profit regulatory system. which to me sucks so bad I can't even, you know, where's the air sickness back?
Well, but you have to do that. When you spend as much as we spend in government, you have to find some kinds of sources of revenue to justify your existence and to keep things going. And so, we, you know, there's a lot of ways we do it. We do it, you know, we do it with traffic patrol as an example. Traffic patrol is not about controlling traffic. It's about saying, okay, you know, how can I meet revenue goals? And so you sort of think of the way they patrol the highways or don't patrol the highways. In many cases, you should be thinking of it more as a tax rather than a safety measure, because that's exactly how it's really handled.
Well, once in a great while, I mean, not so much now because we know it's not there. When we were naive, you know, 25 years ago, you could find somebody at the NASD if you had an issue that wasn't covered by any of the rules. I mean, stuff happens. You could actually call your representative and say, look, this is what we're being faced with. Is there anybody there that can help us out? And they would put you in touch with, you know, general counsel or somebody. You know, and it would be a conversation. It wasn't like the guy was your attorney, obviously. But they would say, oh, no, that's covered by this other something. Now, they won't. There's not a question anybody will ask. They don't know. It's all up to you. They can't begin to help you. And as soon as there's an audit, they know exactly what the answer is, and you did it all wrong. You know, it's like, what is our goal here? Our goal is to have a securities system. Of course, I guess that's gone when you have people paying kickbacks for order flow, and when you kicked everybody out of the business except a few firms. I guess we don't care about any of that anymore anyway, do we? I mean, why would I even think that anybody cares about anybody? But I mean, that's what it's. But it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen the next day, Kevin. It's this long progression where you get people in there that don't know what they're doing so much. Then they hire people and they train them in their way. Then the next guy gets even like worse. I mean, it's not like it happens in a second. Just saying.
Well, and keep in mind what you're describing is the same government that so many people want to take over administration of health care.
Well, right, and well, to a certain extent, they have. They already have. I mean, they've taken over enough of it to where nobody can get into it. They've let some people skirt the rules to such an extreme extent that you can't even be part of it. And when I say be part of it, I mean PTI right now is not big enough to self-insure. But if we had 50 people, we should be able to self-insure. When I say self-insure, we're not going to have we're not going to be able to handle a $10 million bill for, you know, somebody having a preemie baby that's had been 15 surgeries before they're 6 months old. I mean, we can't cover that. We know that. So you would buy insurance like just for that.
But the huge ticket items, catastrophic.
And you'd pay for that, and you'd say, okay, but the rest of the time, for every person here, we're going to throw $500 in a bank account. If we had 50 people, it starts, you know, and if somebody goes in and has an appendectomy or something else, whatever it is, we'll just pay for it. I mean, now why can't we do that? Well, we can't do that because we can't get the same price as the firms. The insurance companies aren't selling insurance now. They're selling you their network. They're selling you their pricing. When they charge you $1,500 a month, they're charging you because they're able to get the appendectomy for $5,000, and if you went in, it'd be $20,000. So I mean, they essentially have put any competitor out of business, which is not the way the system's supposed to work, I don't think. Anyway,
it's definitely not.
SP Futures up 13.
But I'm going to pile on top of it and say,
how about doing that after break?
I'm going to ask the question: is your government competent or caring?
They get run over by the bigger places. I don't know. Let's talk about that after the break. SP Futures up 43. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Dave Scatino on the board with Mr. Matt Weber over there as well. S&P futures up 12, NASDAQ futures up 40. We're just relentlessly piling money in, and we're going to keep going, and we're going to keep justifying it. And one of these days, you know, we'll see. Maybe it'll just keep going, or maybe the economy will turn around. We don't know what the future holds, but Dow futures up 121. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 19. That's 0.1%. FTSE up 55.8%. These guys have been leading the pack. I wonder if there's any correlation between that and the fact that everybody's going to get the vaccines there first. I don't know necessarily why there would be, but maybe that's what's causing it. CAC round up 17.3%. In Asia, we got the Nikkei down 58.2%. Shanghai up 2, call that flat. Hang Seng up 107.4%. Yesterday, we had the Dow up 85, the S&P down 2, NASDAQ up 27, so a slow, and mostly the upside day. Bonds, 0.92. The Bund, minus 0.56. Japan, positive 0.3. They went up a basis point. Oil, up 48 cents, 46.12. We've seen that. Haven't seen a 46 number in a while. Brent, 49.22. That's up 50 cents. Natural gas down 2 to 2.48. These guys have been down quite a bit since their high, which is interesting. RBOB up a penny to 127. We got gold up 490, 1846. Silver up 23 cents, 2437. These guys are going back and forth in this range, but have not really broken out either way. I mean, we haven't gone under 1750, and we haven't gone above 2000. So still in this range. When it gets low, I guess you want to buy it. How you want to sell it, but you know, who knows? First time you do that, it might break out. Copper up 3 cents, 351. Copper is relentless to the upside here. Who's doing traffic, weather, sports? We need some traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, 6:33 in Chicago. Traffic this morning, mainly it's clear. We do have an incident on I-57 that was pretty ugly this morning. There was a semi that rolled over that blocked all the lanes at I-57 between the Cal Sag Bridge and 127th Street. It's getting by on the left shoulder. There's also another incident traffic reported at the Bishop Ford and Dalton exit. In weather today, Chicago currently 34 and breezy. It's going to be high, 44 and high, 44 mostly sunny, which is kind of warm for December. Our Phoenix listeners, it's 40 and clear. Be a high of 65 and sunny. In sports, we had no Thursday night football, so it was a light night in sports last night. There were a few college basketball games. The NFL, the Bears will be hosting the Lions at noon. Arizona takes on the Rams in the afternoon game. College football, undefeated Notre Dame hosts Syracuse, Illinois hosts Iowa, and the Northwestern and Michigan games were canceled. Back to you.
But that's interesting. What happened, Kevin, what happened to the next week's game with Wake Forest? This is it for the Irish, right?
The ACC canceled all of their December 12th games, so it looks like they're really trying to protect their championship game. And with all the students gone home, this allows, after Saturday's game, this allows people, Notre Dame, Clemson, and potentially Miami, depending on how things shake out this weekend, to go into a bubble before the championship game. So that's probably good. It guarantees that Notre Dame will be in it even if they lose to Syracuse, although Syracuse is awful, and they should not lose that game. It guarantees that they will be in the championship game. And it probably, I forget who Clemson's playing this weekend, but it probably guarantees a Notre Dame-Clemson matchup. If for any reason they can't play the ACC championship game, then the Irish are the ACC champions in their first year, presumably only year in the conference, but I kind of thinking that they're just going to throw in with that and stay there. Maybe they left out, eliminated the possibility of Wake Forest upsetting the Irish or Florida State upsetting Clemson that weekend. It's probably a smart move tactically from a playoff standpoint because it preserves the ACC's best chance of getting two teams.
Well, plus your teams have already played 10 games. Everybody else playing 5 or 6.
Well, I think that's that's a big problem for some of the Big Ten teams. Even though the rankings people have kept Ohio State in the top four, that's an opinion, not something that they have proved on the field. And the more of these games get canceled, I think the more that becomes a factor. I remember the selection committee making a big deal a few years ago before the Big 12 had a championship game, of saying, well, they left out a Big 12 team because it didn't have that extra opportunity to prove itself. That was a one-game difference.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if it's a five-game difference?
Well,
it doesn't make sense to me. And you know what? If that's a problem for Ohio State, my reaction to that would be take it up with your conference. They're the ones that delayed you.
Well, Michigan is not playing this weekend, correct?
Correct.
So how many games?
And the Big Ten protocols are pretty strict. It's like a 21-day process. So even if they play, the guys that are involved are not going to play.
So why if the Center Disease Control is 10 days, and why my doctors and all his buddies were all 10 days, why is the Big Ten 21 days? I mean, what are they?
Well, the Big Ten has a quarantine period, and then they have a period where you have to prove that you don't have any kind of heart damage or any lasting cardio issues. So that's what that's about. They're saying that extra time has more to do with being ready for competition rather than ready for daily life.
I'm not so sure that doesn't make some sense. I don't know at the end of 10 days, of course nobody's going to ask me to play halfback, but if that would have been the smartest thing, the first thing he did was walk out in a college football stadium. You might want to take a look at
that. I do think that there's a logic to that makes sense. It's not, it's not off the wall. As you start looking at some of the crazy things that we've done and things that we, continue to do that don't work, that's one of those areas of caution that seems to make a lot of sense.
Well, I think that the idea of if you're in a room with somebody, we seem to know that 30 to 40% of the people have some kind of an immune system, immune from someplace, because not everybody gets this thing. We also seem to know that 25 to 40%, depending on how you do the math, have already had it before. So the idea that just if you were seen close to somebody who has it, that you can't do anything for 2 weeks is a little bit of a stretch. Especially maybe if you had it before, I would say. I don't know. Just the idea that you're around somebody. But Maddie and I were talking about it on the way in, Kevin, because we're going to talk about more about what we were saying before the break. I mean, how the government is making these inroads. I think they're making these inroads because companies are right with them, because there's always a company behind them that's making money on this stuff. I mean, it really is
a very fascist making money, but there's also, you know what, I mean, it's also, there's a surge of mindset here. The socialist wannabes have never gone away. we are starting to be able to seize these moments for different stuff. I think that's a lot of that is what's behind, you know, the Green New Deal, climate change and so on, is it's the new excuse for the kind of control that they could never make fly under any other circumstances.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that I agree with you in terms of where we landed. I'm not there with you in the sense that that it's somehow this left wing plot.
It's more seize the moment.
Well, I mean, I know in our business, for somebody who traded in trading floor for 20 years, and the trading floors were there before me, really not so much after me. We went from having virtually thousands of people in the industry competing, and pretty much making a living. Some did, some didn't, and it was a very straight game. I mean, now whether it was it an efficient electronically it is now? Hell no. Would you want to go back to that in that way? Hell no. But now you've got 2, 3, 4 people making all the money that all those people made. They're controlling all the markets, and the rules, you look at some of the markets, which I do all day for my clients, most of these markets would have been illegal in my day. They're too wide, nobody's there. There's payment for order flow, which was illegal. I mean, there's preferencing. You get to look at your customer's order before you expose it to the marketplace. That was illegal. So anybody who says, I mean, you can be a total dunderhead and say, that's capitalism. To me, it's a cartel. I mean, so clearly there's nowhere near the competition that there was 20 years ago. And it was all, but this is not new, Kevin. I mean, if you look at it,
it's not. In fact, we have been systematically eliminating competition, and often enough eliminating it in the name of
competition,
trying to help people.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is like the classic example of that. It was allowed to consolidate, in fact, to really go crazy on consolidation during the Obama administration, because there was no other way to make Obamacare work.
Right, you got to be the same people. I mean, you think you need their help.
If you thought that Obamacare was a good thing that was helping people, then you had to allow all of these inroads into the competitive landscape of pharmaceuticals. Otherwise, the system would fall apart under the weight of it.
Well, the example and reason why I use my industry is that it happened twice, Kevin, and really. When you talk about the Buttonwood tree and the New York Stock Exchange, and your seat was your place on the curb, right, that type of thing. Well, you had people that stood outside, and they competed. If you wanted to trade a share of stock, these guys would compete, you know, sort of like Lloyd's of London, for how much they wanted to pay for it, how much they would sell it to you for, that type of thing. So there was competition in the system. And then they ended up getting a floor to the New York Stock Exchange, and there were people in there that traded stocks. Well, over time, it became illegal. Well, they never became illegal. They just didn't let anybody new in. So it got to the point where there was one IBM specialist. There was one General Motors specialist. So you had one guy. All right. Now you had competing people that were brokers that went around and charged you to go to the specialist post and do your trade. So that was, and there were a couple of guys that were in their 80s when I was young that basically were still in the system and they could walk around and they could make a trade at IBM and nobody cared about them because they were there for 5 minutes before they fell over in a heap. You had to pick them up. They were that old. I mean, so you essentially had an industry that had got down to the point where, no, there's not competing specialists in IBM. There's one guy. And when the CBOE was put together, not only was the CBOE, that's why I can't, it bothers me when it goes down like it's going down. It was one of the most incredible changes in not only that system, but in how we talked about things in the early 70s. Early 70s was they should teach this in every school. For some reason, Congress got together with academia and some people who were forward-thinking, and the Board of Trade, which was always very competitive, was sort of involved in that. In that period of 3 and 4 and 5 years, you deregulated airlines, you deregulated railroads, you deregulated trucking, and, by the way, you started up the CBOE, which said enough with this crap with the New York Stock Exchange with one specialist. We're going to have competing market makers. And, oh, by the way, we're going to not let the guy who trades for his own account trade for a client in the same crowd in the same day, which, of course, the specialist does in New York all the time. I mean, he's both the broker and he takes positions for himself. Well, duh. So the CBOE did that and said, we're going to have competing people. We have, instead of one IBM specialist, we're going to have 50 IBM market makers competing here. And it was an amazing breath of fresh air for not only that industry, but it was a show and tell for like the rest of the country. And sure enough, the day that started, you could just see these firms going, wait a minute, we're giving this crap up to those guys? And every year that I was there, from 81 on or 80 on, a little less competitive, a little less. Somebody got their finger in it. These guys will outweigh anybody, Kevin. The corporations never die. And, you know, when I got there, I was pretty young, and now I'm not so young, and they're still here, the same people, the Goldman Sachs, the Morgan Stanleys. They want the business to be just theirs. And once in a while, you get some pushback from government, and once in a while, they grease people's pockets and they move forward. But every decade, they move forward. And somehow, some way, and I don't know how you do it with the way the elections are done now and the people we get. I mean, Trump didn't know enough to change it, and Biden surely doesn't want to change it because he probably loves it the way it is because it somehow works and he can call those guys for money. I don't know what the motivation are of the two men, but I don't see how anybody right now with all the crap that's going on and all the simple stuff these people have to address every day, you know, how many women are in this staff and how many this or in this, how somebody would actually, you know, bring back some of this stuff and make things somewhat more competitive. I mean, that's when you or Lou or anybody in the, you know, that has a right lane starts talking about the people on the left. I never said I agreed with them. All I said was they look at the system right now and they go, this isn't working. This isn't competitive at all. What is it? It's a fascist 3 or 4 firms in every industry. Now their solutions to the problem, I agree with you, are pretty screwed up. But at least they look at it and say, I mean, there's a lot of people from the right that will say, hey, well, what's the problem with Google and everything? What's the problem with 3 guys making $1 million a day in the CBOE floor and the market suck? I mean, I think there's a big problem with it. That's just me.
Well, I think that's a big problem. And honestly, I think people are realizing that with the likes of Google and other, they call them tech giants. When I think of tech companies, I think more of Cisco and people like that rather than the service providers. But we'll call them that because that's what they're commonly called. I think people are realizing the power we've ceded to them and are not liking it. Now, it's not making people stop using their service because we've come to rely on it. I don't know if we're capable now of having competitors emerge from there or if they just need to be broken up. Salesforce would be in that category as well. Salesforce has always talked about its ecosystem, which is, people who have software that works in conjunction with Salesforce, but even Salesforce then has been out there buying them up, as you saw with Slack this
yeah.
week. They're just buying up the ecosystem now, and while I think that's, you know, that they have a wonderful product and it's a good company, the potential for that to get out of control is very, very high.
Well, that's where you
said we're not century been diligent about protecting competition, and it's biting us now.
Well, we're idiots collectively. I mean, I'm not a
good at it.
Yeah, but I'm not. You know, I'm not an expert on this, but I don't know. You know more about this than me, or maybe Maddie does, but I don't know how you come up with a competitor to quote Google. But I do know you don't let Google develop Google Maps and put MapQuest out of business. You don't have Microsoft have Office. You don't let them have Outlook. You don't let them have what's the one where they do the meetings for people. You can't let them go there. Microsoft, you've got this base system and nobody seems to be able to compete. You can have that until somebody finds a way to compete, but you don't get to buy everybody else and put it on your system. And oh, by the way, nobody can buy a computer with your system in it unless you use your Office or unless you use, you know, whatever, all the other things that string together that there used to be competitors in. There's the sin is right there, I think, or at least on a small end. I mean, you know, why do you use Microsoft Word? Word Perfect. Most people would say it was better, right? Where is it? Does anybody even know where it even exists?
Well, you know, actually, there is some story to that, and it isn't because it's better. It's because people gravitated to the Office suite when Excel killed Lotus Notes or Lotus 1-2-3. And the way it did that was it came out with the pivot table function, and Lotus was years away from being able to match that.
Well, and if they
because the analytical tools were so much better, so it won because it was a better product, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. But then, you know, how much else do you let them acquire? Gets to be the question.
Well, it was a better product, but did the money to make it a better product come legitimately from investments like Lotus would have had to do, or did they just start charging for it anyway and use the money to make it better?
Well, I don't know that they charged anything extra. I think, you know, Excel was priced how Excel was priced at the time. But you know, the point is, it's one thing to win based on innovation, based on better products, based on better service, and those kinds of things, and that's fine. But then when you start looking at some of the acquisitions that follow, that's where the problem lies. That's where you get stuck and start saying, you know what, we cannot let this grow out of control because now there will be no competition in this market. And that, you know, you can't blame a company for trying it. You can blame us as voters and our government for letting them get away with it.
Well, you give somebody in the drug industry a patent without any regard to costs for 17 years, maybe 19 if you can cheat and get the other 2 years. Now, and I'm not saying legally cheat where you go to jail, but against the spirit of the law, or cheat. Then you let them move the place overseas to where they pay 5% in taxes and the other guys pay 35. And I'm going to say the big firms now out of the next, I don't know how many blockbuster drugs. Well, how much time do you think they spend? I mean, they still do a lot of research, but doing research or just absolutely you're covering the field and knowing if Matty Weber all of a sudden has a chemistry thing in his basement and digs up a cure for, you know, toenail fungus, they know right away and they buy the guy out. Or they say, oh man, it's going to be $1 billion to get through the FDA. You don't have $1 billion. How about you sell your place to us and we'll get it through for you? I mean, out of the next 30 drugs that Pfizer has, I'm going to say 28 of them will be bought, or 25. Because you've let them have so much money with the taxes and the patents and everything else. And that the president of that place, we don't even have to know what a test tube looks like. Maybe even people use test tubes anymore.
Yeah, so your question gets to be, you know, well, among others, is 17 years an appropriate amount of time for a patent?
No.
I would say no. It's way too much. And then when the patent is ready to expire, are you going to let them acquire the producer of the generic replacement for it?
Well, anything that...
And jack the price up that way.
Anything that you want to...
Say the answer should be no, and it isn't.
Anytime you... and again, everybody knows I have this thing for railroads. The reason why I do is because if you read the history of the early railroads, virtually every nasty thing, every naughty deed that anybody could possibly have imagined, the original owners of railroads did. Right, I mean, it was like Mitty Weber's always upset when I tell him he can't invent a new fetish because they've all been invented before. I mean, the whole life thing with Enron.
But it's a noble effort to try.
It's a noble effort to try, yeah. Everything that Enron did, the Union Pacific did. Or the Central Pacific did. Off balance sheet companies where the people who were presidents of the first company made an off balance sheet company to run stuff through there and made their money there and that with the, all that crap was all done before. And one of the things that you do is when you give somebody something, be it a patent, be it whatever it is, there has to be somewhat, I think pricing should be very competitive. But now, if you give the O'Neill brothers, 20 miles on each side of the road to build a railroad from Chicago to Galena, which is one of the first railroads, and you get to sell that off to pay for it, and all of a sudden you got the rails down and you get yourself a little locomotive and you're ready to go, and the farmer says to you, hey, now I can get my corn to market. How much for my corn to get on your train? How much you got? I mean, when there's no competition, somewhere, someplace, we just gave you, the Neal brothers, something and saying, we're doing this so people can now get stuff to market so the economy can grow. It's not up to you to take every piece of profit from the corn grower. It's up to you to charge a fair price, which is your idea of a fair price, and a real fair price might be totally different if you're the only person. There's no roads and there's no other railroads, or there's no barges or anything like that. So yeah, so a patent, okay, you've got a patent for, say, polio. Well, nobody wants their kids with polio. Do you get to charge it like 2 years' salary of everybody in the country? And have every nickel in everybody's bank account come to you tomorrow after the government just gave you the patent, and probably you use government research on half of it or some university? I mean, there needs to be, whenever you give somebody something, Kevin, there needs to be a string attached to it, you would think, right? If you did it all on your own.
I mean, how many times have I said, do business with the mob, you're going to have to play by the mob's rules.
Right, right.
It can be very lucrative until it's not. And, you know, the government is sort of the mob, only they're so selective in how they set their rules that it makes no sense.
All right, we got a couple minutes. Let's get back to this weekend. Are college games? We got Michigan, Maryland canceled. Is Ohio State playing supposedly?
I think so. Let's see. Let me pull it up real quick while we're talking.
So if Michigan wants to screw Ohio State, they just tell them they can't play.
They can. There is some provision. So Ohio State is, at the easiest interpretation is that Ohio State needs 6 games to be able to play in the Big Ten championship.
Right.
Now, there is some calculus in there, better calculation, it's not calculus. But there is some allowance that says if the average number of games dips below 6 across the conference, then it can be, how do I want to say this, then it can be 5 games to get
right
into the championship.
Well, who played the most? Northwestern's played, what, 7 or something?
I'm working on it. I've got to get it right up here. There's Big Ten.
And the guys from out west.
Let me pull up the standings as well.
Well, the Pac-10's got no chance.
That will tell us.
The Pac-10's got no chance of anybody getting anywhere, right?
Right, they've had games canceled, and they weren't going to have very many in the first place.
And then Oregon State beat Oregon.
I think just about everybody has a loss, possibly except USC, but USC's played about 2 games.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Big Ten, as you're looking at it, and we look at the overall here, which is the same in their conference, in Ohio State's side of the bracket, it looks like the max number of games is 6 for Indiana. A lot of teams have played 6. So Indiana's played 6, Michigan has played 6, Rutgers has played 6, Penn State has played 6. Actually, you could argue that Penn State has played 1 and then just showed up, kind of phoned it in for the rest.
Yeah.
Northwestern has played 6, Iowa 6, but then there's a lot with 5. Now, that Minnesota, Purdue, Illinois probably get to 6 easily. Nebraska's 1-4, so they've played 5. So that whole western side is at or will get to 6. the eastern side, Ohio State has played four, Maryland has played four, looks like Michigan State has played five, Michigan six, Rutgers. I think the, and Penn State has played, so I think they'll get to the average of six. So, so Ohio State really, really needs to play. Now, if we look at it, Ohio State is playing Michigan State at noon, Nebraska, Purdue, Penn State, Rutgers, Indiana, Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois. Northwestern, Minnesota is canceled. Michigan, Maryland is canceled.
Right. So,
so that's what the Big Ten
so
looks like.
So do you think if Ohio State can't go to the championship game, they're still going to go to the top four?
I don't know what to expect from the from this committee. If they play five games and you have you know, you have other games, you know, like if we go to the SEC and look at theirs, you have Florida has played eight already, and Georgia is, well, Georgia has two losses. So Alabama's played eight, Texas A&M has played seven. So it, you know, it sort of depends on how many more they play. Let's, if Texas A&M plays eight and has one loss, and Ohio State manages to get in six and has no losses, I don't know how they're going to deal with that.
So Georgia and LSU, what happened to those guys? They just, their team is playing in the NFL, pretty much.
Well, to a point, you know, Georgia's 6-2; they're still pretty good.
Yeah. All right, Kevin. Well, we'll have to.
But yeah, and if you look out at the Pac-12, everybody's kind of stuck on 3-4 games. So.
So the Irish are where? They're Syracuse. They're terrible, right?
Syracuse is very, very bad. Syracuse is, let's see, that Syracuse is 1-8.
So you want to get out of that one with playing a bunch of people and not getting anybody hurt?
Not getting, no, yeah, don't get hurt. It's sort of like, you know, when I started playing, when I was in my 40s and still playing softball, the first mission was don't get hurt.
Thanks, Kevin. SAP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures up 31. Come back. We're going to have our man, Mr. Collin. We're going to talk about some of the betting, and then right after him, we're going to have Carl Denninger like we do every Labor Monday, or Sunday, Saturday, Friday. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P Futures up 1075, NASDAQ Futures up 32, Dow up 117. We're at the jobs report here in about 7:30, and we're interesting to see what that shows. We had
less unemployment claims this week. Of course, we had the holiday in there as well, so we're not so sure. We'll find out how that works up. Colin, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So what's wrong with my new plan of looking at the COVID, and if five of the COVID guys are on defense, I bet the over, and if they're on offense, I bet the under.
How about last week, Chief? I'm in one of the season-long handicapping contests and took the Denver Broncos as a six-point underdog at home last week. The selections have to be made on Saturday by 3 o'clock Eastern time. So put that pick in, and then it comes out late Saturday night that the Broncos don't have a quarterback. They all had COVID issues. The line goes from Denver plus six to plus 16.5. The Broncos have to roll out a practice squad wide receiver as their quarterback. He proceeds to throw one completion the entire game, and the Saints win handily. So, yeah, that's a prime example right there of the COVID situation that's out of control. And you guys were talking about it earlier. The college football season just really wild with all these games being canceled, and then the debate about certainly Ohio State, if they don't play enough games to qualify. It's going to be really interesting here down the stretch. But yeah, I mean, the games continue, and this is typically, that conference championship week, but because of COVID, not the case this year. I think Army-Navy usually would be scheduled for next weekend, but that's changed a little bit this year. So, yeah, definitely wild times, but wanted to jump in pretty quick, Chief, with the Irish. Another nice win last week. I know you guys were talking about Syracuse this week. And it's going to be a situation where, you know, the Irish are just going to want to get in, take care of business, not get injured, but also not let down too much, because we saw earlier in the season against Duke and against Louisville, you know, you don't want to be in a dogfight here to get into, to solidify your spot for that, you know, that ACC championship game, which looks like it's going to be a crash course rematch with Clemson.
That should be interesting. So what, in terms of the betting, other than no game, there's really no adjustment to the bet ever. No quarterbacks, no halfbacks, no anything. I mean, the injury report normally comes out, when football's supposed to come out on what, like Wednesday or something in the pros, or Tuesday? I mean, there's supposed to be some.
Yeah, it kind of varies, and then certain organizations try to cover up, or like the Patriots, for example, they'll keep people on the injury report. Like Tom Brady was on the injury report every week for about 12 years, and he wasn't injured. So they try to you know, work ways around it. And then yeah, like that example last week with the Broncos. I mean, that was people, you know, that were in these contests. There's this large money involved in these contests, and if you had the Broncos, you were just, you know, tough luck. There's no adjustment.
Well,
you just took the loss.
In my day, there was. If you were with questionable, you had one of them had 75% chance of playing, one had 50%, one had 25%, and there were three adjectives. There was questionable, and there were two other things. Is that still how they do it?
It's like questionable, doubtful, and likely not to play. With the fantasy stuff, it's really you can get the updates really quickly, because that impacts fantasy football so much. And you know, Maddie and I were in a league together, and it's like you're constantly monitoring that stuff to see all week, you know, this guy's practiced, he looks good to go, and then all of a sudden, Sunday morning, you get the update that he's out, and you have to kind of panic and adjust your roster.
Well, BC and BM, before Colin and before Maddie, George Halas actually got fined because he was messing with the injury report and wouldn't let anybody know if Gale Sayers was playing. Obviously, Gale Sayers made quite a difference as to whether you think the Bears might have been able to win on Sunday. Just a little bit of a difference. So what do you got? With all this having said, what do you got? Would you reserve the right?
Yeah. I'm going to start in the college game. An interesting COVID scenario here too, but initially our first game we're going to look at was going to be the Liberty Flames at the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, Chief.
Wow.
The number 18th ranked Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, Liberty had to cancel their appearance in that game. So they've been replaced by the number 13th ranked BYU Cougars, who are sitting at 9-0 right now. And they'll be at Coastal Carolina at 4:30 on Saturday. If you have not had an opportunity to watch BYU play, I would recommend taking a look at this one. Zach Wilson is their Heisman candidate quarterback. I've heard rumblings that he possibly could be a fit for the Bears next year in the draft, which is very interesting, seeing Jim McMahon came from BYU. But if you haven't had a chance to watch this team, I'd recommend it. We're going to roll with the Mormons in this one, Chief. They're getting 10 points. They're 10-point favorites on the road at Coastal Carolina. BYU, 9-0, straight up, 9-0 against the spread this year. They've really kind of just blown out every team that they faced. They haven't played, obviously, the cream of the crop, but they played some decent teams. They played at Boise State. They played Houston and Navy, and, I mean, they handled them all with ease. So Coastal Carolina's 9-0. They've had a great season. But their top wins so far have been against Appalachian State and Louisiana Lafayette. So a step up in class for them here. And really expect the Cougars to take care of business, again, as a 10-point favorite. So that's what we'll be looking at in the college ranks. And then if we move on to the NFL, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the Bears. You know, the Lions are a 3-point dog coming to Chicago this weekend. We know the Bears struggles offensively. Doesn't matter the quarterback situation. The really concerning part of the Bears for me last weekend is you're coming off a bye, and typically that's a situation where you're going to be well prepared. You're going to have a good chance to win a very winnable game at Green Bay because they've had their deficiencies. They're not very good defensively. Their previous two home games barely won against Jacksonville and got blown out by Minnesota. So very winnable game for the Bears, and they just laid an egg. So I would probably just pass in this Bears game. I think they'll probably win this game, but because of the Lions. Their organization's also in turmoil. They fired their coach and their GM. So I think the Bears probably win, but I'm just not really too interested in this one. Probably a pass for me. We'll move on to the New Orleans Saints, the team we just talked about that beat the Denver Broncos last week. They're going to Atlanta on Sunday. They're 2.5-point favorites. We're going to take the Atlanta Falcons as the underdog, as the home underdog. They were 3.5-point underdogs last week at home against a pretty good Las Vegas Raiders team. And blew them out 43-6, caused 5 turnovers. Atlanta's getting some defensive players healthy, and they're kind of looking defensively like they did a few years back when they went to the Super Bowl. A lot of the same kind of core guys are there defensively, but just getting healthy. Their coach got fired a few weeks back, Dan Quinn, and their interim coach, Raheem Morris, took over, and they're 4-2. They're playing pretty well, and the Saints are still without Drew Brees, and Taysom Hill, coincidentally enough, a former BYU quarterback, will be starting for the Saints. They had beat Atlanta 2 weeks ago with Hill under center, but Atlanta will have a little extra time to prepare for him. And as I mentioned, they're just playing good football right now. And sometimes when a coach gets fired midseason, the players will rally around an interim guy like this. So we'll take the Falcons as an underdog, as I mentioned. And then we'll continue on to the Arizona Cardinals. We had them a couple weeks ago, Chief, if you remember.
Yep.
Against the Buffalo Bills, where they scored on a Hail Mary but took a knee and decided not to cover the spread for us.
Yes, it was nice of them.
we'll take them again this week as an underdog at home, catching 3 points against the Rams. Rams lose to the 49ers last week and turned the ball over 4 times, a couple fumbles, a couple interceptions. Jared Goff, a little shaky at quarterback. Cardinals come off a really gut-wrenching loss at New England, missed a late field goal, held the Patriots to 179 yards on offense and still lost the game. So we're going to roll with the Cardinals here and Kyler Murray, their talented young quarterback, at home as a 3-point underdog. He's 12-6 against the spread when catching points. In that scenario. And then the last play, Chief, a team I've backed now for a couple weeks is the San Francisco 49ers. The Buffalo Bills will be headed to this game's actually going to be played in Arizona because the air conditions in California do not allow the 49ers to play in California. So this game will be in Arizona. The Niners are a team that, you know, went 15-3 last year, lost in the Super Bowl, have had a cluster of injuries, but are getting some guys back now healthy. Mainly Raheem Mostert, their stud running back, Deebo Samuel, their wide receiver, and Richard Sherman, their best defensive back, all coming back healthy. Took care of the Rams last week as a near touchdown underdog and won the game outright. So Kyle Shanahan, pretty good coach, has this team trending in the right direction. And we're going to go against the Bills like we did a couple weeks ago. Funny enough that this game is being played in Arizona. And the last time the Bills played in Arizona, they lost on that Hail Mary to the Cardinals. So I think that's our slate for this week, Chief. And it's feeling pretty good. You know, I don't think the picks haven't got off to a great start, but I think this week we'll bounce back pretty nicely.
Colin, what was the line in the Niners game?
It's a pick'em. I'm sorry, I didn't mention that.
Niners pick 'em. So we got, just to recap real quick before we let you fly, BYU minus 10 versus Coastal Carolina. Falcons plus 2.5 at home versus the Saints. Cardinals plus 3 at home versus the Rams. And a 49ers pick 'em at home. Well, not really at home. In Arizona against Buffalo.
Yeah, you got it.
It's not how you start, Colin. It's how you finish, buddy.
That's exactly right. It's a long season, Chief.
All right, take care, man.
Get there, though.
Take care.
Have a good weekend, guys.
Thanks, Colin.
We're going to go right to Kyle. Kyle, how are you, buddy?
Hello.
See now, a guy like Carl, he's going to screw the whole thing up because he's going to look at the Coastal Carolina game, and he's going to walk into his local casino, or he's going to try and bet like $10,000 at it or something, and they're going to go, we can't take that.
Me? Nah.
I used to be in Vegas. I used to go a lot, and way back in the day, and they'd have these nondescript games on at night, you know, like basketball or something. And somebody would walk up at like $2,000 and they'd go, nah. on these games, man, they're not all, they gotta be maximums on a lot of these games that are, you know, the Ivy League and places like that. I mean, you drop a big bet down there, nobody wants that, do they?
Well, I would think not. You know, the whole idea of the book is to balance the handle on both sides, right?
Right.
Yeah, you'd really, if you bet some unknown game and you put a big dollar amount on it, you're going to move the line in some unknown Ivy League basketball game or something like that. You that may get rejected, but if it gets accepted, it's going to move the line because I don't think a ton of money comes in on those games.
Well, that's when the guy knows he's betting against you and he's not a bookie anymore. He's a gambler.
Yeah,
right.
So, Carol, we've got numbers coming out today. We've had the unemployment numbers. I don't know how with Thanksgiving part of the week. I don't know how good that number was, but I just every morning, Patty and I talk about it on the way in, and it really, boy, it's just a question of which side of the limousine you look out of. You can talk this market or talk this economy one way or the other. I mean, if you got stocks and you got so many stocks that are $300 that are, you know, 10 times sales and those kinds of things, it looks like it's 2,000, but they go up every day and you sit there and you're watching. If you're in some of these businesses that are being favored, shall we say, you're doing all right. And if not, you're just, You wonder where the next nickel's going to come from, and look at these packages, and the packages, you know, they might help people out one day, and then the next day, a whole group of people's not getting help that other people are. It's just, it really is crazy stuff. I mean, just trying to put any kind of a handicap on it, at least for me.
I think there's, we've got this generalized problem that there's this pandemic that, a lot of the data does not support the claims that are being made by people, within the industry, both the medical industry and also within the government machinery that is driving these decisions. And it's interesting because if you look back in history at times that there have been, shall we say, scams that have been run by various economists or various organs of the government, the market has had a funny way of sniffing those things out before the rest of the economy does. And, you look at what happened in 2007 and 2008, and the dive that took place in the fall of 2007 when those couple of hedge funds blew up was, you know, was one of those things that people just kind of shook it off and said, oh, you know, that's just a couple of guys that were stupid. Well, as it turned out, it wasn't a couple of guys that were stupid.
Right.
Okay, it was a whole lot of people that were scamming a whole lot of other people. And you know, 7-8 months later, it all went down the toilet, right?
Well, Cal, as you know, I try and be an open book, good and bad. Honesty is the best policy, I think, although maybe not all the time. We had a client who was one of the first guys to lose a bunch of dough and one of these Bear Stearns funds in 2007.
Right.
I saw it. I mean, and I... he's more, not really my guy, he's more my brother's dude, but nice guy, real bright guy. And, I never made the extension that said Bear Stearns is going under. I just thought he got caught in the wrong plan and the plan conked. I mean, it never dreamed to me that it was a systematic risk where Bear Stearns had 50 off balance sheet places like Enron. I mean, I never put that two and two together. I mean, in retrospect, I guess I was an idiot for a month or two. But I mean, why would you ever, given the fact that, you know, they're looking up your, you know, where the sun don't shine here when they do an audit on us, why wouldn't you think that they wouldn't do the same for Bear Stearns? I mean, how do you miss off balance sheet companies, for God's sake?
I mean, that's the point, is nobody's missing them. They're intentionally ignoring it, all right? And that's one of the things, you know, like, for example, there was this big hot controversy came out with Johns Hopkins about a week ago, where their economics department, because, you know, they do more than just medicine, right? They're actually a college.
Oh, yeah.
And so this professor in their economics department a few weeks ago had done this webinar on the economic impacts and whether, you know, what excess death really looked like or whether it existed within the COVID, you know, the COVID reality. And then this paper gets published that essentially says, hey, wait a minute, I can't find it in the statistics, okay? So there was, when you look at the data, I mean, let's face it, about 2.9 million people a year die in America. This is, and oh, by the way, there's a nasty little bit in there, which is that since Obamacare went into effect, in the years prior to that, in the decade or so prior to Obamacare actually taking effect, the population fatality rate per 100,000 people, which is, you know, the broadest way of looking at how fast do people die, right? It had been going down. And literally on the year that Obamacare was effective, that reversed and started going upward. And it has been since. So not only do we have more people in the world and in the country than we had then, but in addition to that, the number of people who die per 100,000 in the United States has been rising on a continuous basis since about 2011.
It's been
going up every year.
I think it's because the white males, maybe not even just white males, maybe males in general, are dying younger.
Well, I don't know this is just big picture type overview, right?
Well, the amount of suicides is huge.
So what this paper says is basically, look, when I look at this and I norm all this stuff out, I don't see the excess debt. Okay, and yet you got the CDC and John Hopkins over here screaming that 300,000 plus people died this year so far that we shouldn't have died. And this paper says, no, that's BS. Well, needless to say, the political academic censorship scream fest started instantly. And so I said, well, okay, who's right? Because I always look, when I see something like this, I always look to uncorrelated data sets. It's one of the things that set off my alarm bells in early 2007 was we had Washington Mutual paying dividends out of money that they didn't have that they were getting from capitalized interest. But it took me a while to dig through their financial reports and find that. And of course that was what started me writing the market ticker to begin with, was I looked at it and I said, okay, that's a nuclear bomb and it's got a fuse on it and it's going to go off. I just don't know exactly when. And so I looked at the Social Security data. Because Social Security does not pay dead people, ever. Okay, I mean, no. I've had my family die, and I've buried basically all of them. And literally within a day or two, Social Security knows you're dead.
Okay? Yeah, they're pretty good at it.
So, I mean, they have a master file, and they're really good at this. And what I found was that when I looked at the month by month deltas, that there was a short dislocation in the early few months of the year. You know, this was when Whitmer and Cuomo and everybody else were shoving sick people into nursing homes and people were dying like crazy in there. But after that, there is none. It's gone. It's back into the channel that it's been running in for the last 5 years.
Well, Carl, I think so, a lot has to do with, I don't dispute anything you're saying. When you talk to the governance part of it, I'll just kind of lob a couple of things out there. We had Professor Goodhart. You've heard that name, haven't you? He's an Oxford guy, and somehow we got him on the show one day, and the Goodhart's law is whenever an index becomes a target, it ceases to be of value as an index, right?
Because not yes. People,
and the other one was at the University of Chicago, I had an advanced cost accounting class where we did all kinds of weird stuff, and one of them was you had to design this is back when, you know, people were paid bonuses on quarterly earnings, your CEOs and stuff. So we essentially had 2 weeks of the course were in designing executive pay packages where you incent and non-incent or whatever, the CEO to do just what you want him to do for the long-term health of the company. And how difficult that really was to put down on a piece of paper. Because you wanted him doing something short-term, but oh, by the way, you didn't want him polluting the river, getting a big bonus, leaving, and all of a sudden you're paying 10 times you have to clean it up 3 years from now. So, I mean,
right.
It's an amazing amount of stuff that you have to put in. But, you know, it's not like I had the answer, because every time you said something, one of the other guys would raise their hand, or girls would say, if you do that, the guy's going to do this. I mean, it really was very difficult to do and really button it up. You know, you come up with ideas, but every idea, basically everything you did, had a reaction someplace else. And I think what we have in government right now, and people making these decisions, and this isn't me calling people in general stupid or individuals stupid. Actually, I think individuals are rarely stupid, but when they get together, they can be very stupid. A camel is a horse designed by committee or something like that. And I think these, when they do stuff like, okay, if a hospital is having trouble because they're overrun with COVID people, which they were in March and April and maybe even February, and all of a sudden they got to shut down their cath lab and they shut down this, and they're actually laying people off in the places hemorrhaging cash like University of Michigan hospitals were. If somebody's dealing with a COVID patient, we're probably going to give them a 25% bonus on Medicare. Now, there's all kinds of good in that idea. But if you took a class like I did or walk through life like you have, you go, wait a minute. There's going to be a consequence to that. We're going to have all kinds of people that the people are going to say died from COVID that just may have had COVID, maybe not, but are dying from, you know, an auto crash and they tested positive type of thing. So somehow you have to get around that. You got to find a way to where it doesn't screw up your count. And I don't think they did that. And I was trying to see a client yesterday and he was telling me, he's a Jewish, the guy in his synagogue, his wife just died and she's been fighting MS for, you know, 20 years and managed to put up a terrific fight and finally, you know, gave up the ghost. But she did everything she possibly could and hung in there and great lady. And of course the death certificate says MS and COVID. And he goes, I don't even think she even had COVID. Or if she did, nobody told anybody type of thing. Now, I mean, you have to find a way both to do what you want to do and incent the hospitals to essentially take care of these people and spread some money around. I don't have any problem with that. But you need to do it in a way where it doesn't bleep up your count. And I don't think our people even recognize that that's going to happen. It's not like you and I could find a way that's 100% where we can incent the hospital and not screw up our account, but at least be aware that that's probably going to happen and let you do something to mitigate it. That's all I'm asking.
Right.
I mean, I'm not asking for Solomon here. I'm asking for somebody to just wake up for a second. I mean, right? I mean,
well, I don't know that you're going to get that because, you know, this is one of the things that you were, you know, that people were talking about and, you know, that you guys were going back and forth on in the first hour was how you have these what start out as decent businesses and turn into monopolies because they buy up everybody else and they basically force all of their competitors out.
Right.
Okay. And that's the downside of unbridled capitalism is that as soon as you can use the weapons that you acquire to force other people out of business, so you essentially destroy your competitors rather than have to compete against them. You don't beat them by being better or faster or cheaper. You beat them by buying them up and eating them. and as soon as that becomes the way that you allegedly grow, you've got a problem. And that's the reason that we have an entire body of law that was put in place more than 100 years ago to try to stop that, because it is one of the things that when you have a lot of money, you'll try to swing your weight around and do that kind of thing. It's easier to cheat than it is to innovate if you can find a way to do it that doesn't get you thrown in jail. And so, you know, the same kind of thing comes into play here. We have a entire industry that instantaneously sprung up around this disease.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And it's made, I mean, they're making $100 million a day selling tests that the so-called preeminent expert in the world, Fauci, says that the reality on these tests is at CT35, at 35 cycles, these things are only 3% of the time tell you that you're actually infectious. The rest of the time you're positive, but you can't get anybody else sick. So why are we quarantining people for 2 weeks when they can't give it to anybody else?
Well, we can't split that. We can't even split out the people that had it before.
Exactly. And that's but see, here's the thing. For $2, and this is where capitalism, the capitalist economy failed. For $2, we could tell you with certainty whether or not that test we gave you 2 weeks ago was actually positive. Because if you had the virus, you will have antibodies. But we don't do that second test because we don't want people to have the truth.
Right. Oh, yeah. One of my buddies... we're going to go to break here, Kyle, real quick. The number came in at 245, so we're going to talk about that after the break. And plus, let's continue on this, because one of my buddies, his doctor, refuses to give him the antibody test because he'll stop paying attention to the rules. If he does, I'm like, that's cool. SP Futures up 10. They were only up 3 when his number came up, and it bounced back 7.
This time, Harold the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, that's PTISecurities.com.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. For God's sake, we got questions from Carl from the office here, for God's sake. Not even just from listening. We can't even, we haven't got there yet, but we already got guys. We got guys with questions for him. SP Futures, the number came in at 245. The estimates were all over the block. They were somewhere as high as 600, I think. Anyway, we're up 1250 on the S&P. We're up 32 on the NASDAQ. Evidently, it means more stimulus package or something. Dow up 126. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 2. Call that flat. FTSE up 49.7%. CAC around up 19.3. Asia, we got the Nikkei down 58.2. Shanghai up 2. Call that flat. Hang Seng 107. Up, that's 0.4%. Bonds, 0.93. Again, it's the highest it's been in a few months. Bund minus 0.58. Japan positive 0.03. Oil up 20 cents, 45.84. Brent up 36, 49.07. Natural gas down a penny. RBOB unchanged, so not much going on there. Gold up 570, 18.46. Silver up 18 cents, 24.32. Copper up 2 cents, 3.51. We got Forest Traffic Weather Sports, and I have the employment page here and questions for Carl. Go ahead.
Good morning, 736. Traffic this morning is incidents on the south side. I-57 north between the CalSag and 127th. There was an earlier cargo container that was hit and tip. All lanes were closed. Moving now on the shoulder. On 55, another accident earlier this morning. Stevenson before Pulaski. Lakeshore Drive to Tri-State, 28 minutes. It was a jackknife dump truck. Congestion is stop and go. Expect delays up to 5 minutes. Weather this morning in Chicago, 34, sunny and breezy. The high today will be 44 and mostly sunny. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 40 degrees and clear. Highs will be 65 and sunny today. In sports, with no Thursday night football, we had a light college basketball schedule. NFL this Sunday, the Bears will be taking on the Lions at noon. Arizona takes on the Rams at the 3 o'clock game. College football, undefeated Notre Dame hosts Syracuse. The Fighting Illini hosts Iowa. And Northwestern and Michigan games have been canceled. Back to you.
Carl, a question from the bullpen here at PTI Securities, listening into Stacks and Jacks. How do you have 750,000 people, or 31, declare unemployment last week. And you had 240,000 people actually find a job in total.
Well, I'll tell you what. This report is terrible. Okay, last month, if you remember, I said, hey, whether you like it or not, it's good, right? I mean, you know, data is what it is. This report shows on the household survey, unadjusted, shows a 230,000 job loss.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Well, and what's worse is that the not in labor force number last month went down by 750,000 or thereabouts. I'm sorry, 798. This month it went up by 745, and the population adjusted figure was deteriorated by 200,000 people. So not only did we lose jobs on a gross basis, we lost them on a population-adjusted basis, which is, that is awful There's no way to look at that. And as a result, the employment population ratio actually dropped by 2 ticks. I don't care what they say about the so-called official unemployment rate. I'm looking at how many people are working versus how many people there are that are of working age.
Well, you, and as usual, you're digging into your double secret page. I'm on the Luddite page. And on my page, it says, 200,000 less people in the workforce, which I don't know where that came from. But like you say, 100,000 people less working, 300,000 people less unemployed, but 600,000 people in the nebulous, we don't know what they're doing column. Is that kind of what we're talking about?
The non-labor force number on an unadjusted basis went up by 745, which is, I mean, that number's been real bouncy because of all the pandemic related stuff. And, you know, are you unemployed? Well, only if you're looking for work and, you know, this sort of thing. But it went the wrong way hard this last month. But from my perspective, the bigger problem is that this is normally, the November is normally a month that has seasonal hiring coming on and gets caught in the survey week. Okay, because of the holidays. And so, you know, end of October, yeah, okay, but then November is also normally a strong month. And then, of course, January is normally very weak because all those people get laid off. But that this didn't happen this time around. I mean, just to give you an idea, last year, this number on a gross basis, unadjusted, was negative, but by less than half that amount. And on a, when you look at it on a population adjusted basis, it was positive. So in this, you know, this month, you know, the delta was negative by about 100,000. So this is not a good report. I haven't gone through all like I haven't had time yet to go through the age and education breakdown, because the educational breakdown and who lost and who won is, in my opinion, one of the most important components of this, and it's buried way at the back of the document. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, if people who are at the lower socioeconomic rungs of the ladder, if they're the ones getting pounded, it matters less to the consumer spending side of the economy, but it matters much more to the people that are actually out there trying to make a living. And so you get the difference between what the politicians say and what the people feel.
Kyle, first of all, other than one thing of people on this show, we have guys that are extreme left, extreme right. By the way, our most extreme left and our most extreme right guys are both swimmers. What does that tell you?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. But there isn't anybody on this any of our guests. I'll include you. You probably debate me just because you like to debate me on everything. They don't actually care about every man. And I don't. Once we stop talking and I start listening to everybody else, nobody cares about these people, Carl. I think people do, but nobody. You don't see it anywhere in the financials. Is it possible? And I don't want to do this if it's not possible. I know some people on the contributors of the show. They used to love, I mean, Robin used to love to do this. She would go get a job, even though she didn't need it. She'd go get a job every year, like 4 weeks at Macy's.
Right.
Just because she liked talking to people. I guess she got 25% discount for buy all her Christmas presents. And for a month, she wanted to see the new styles and whatever and just enjoyed the hell out of it. Like being an election judge or something. I don't know. I have no idea how much she made. I never asked. But is there a difference between people who get hired for brick and mortar? Can we say there's a difference in the compensation versus the people that are going to be hired to run up the people's porches in UPS or Amazon or whatever? I mean, I don't know that. There may not be. I know UPS doesn't pay squat, and I don't think Amazon does either, but I don't know. How much did Macy's and those people pay? They probably didn't pay that much either, did they?
No, that's all, you know, I mean, that seasonal employment is typically, you know, pretty low wage and no benefits because it's part-time, or, you know, if you get 40 hours, it doesn't matter because you won't qualify. You're not working long enough for, you know, to get on the benefit plans. So I got a quick look at this. This is a barbell report, and that's really ugly. The people who won last month in terms of gaining participation rate, were those who never finished high school and those who had bachelor's degrees. Never finished high school gained big. Bachelor's degrees gained a little. Everybody else lost.
Wow. So what does that tell you?
Think about that. Think about the implications of that. The entire middle of, and we're not talking about little losses either. We're talking half a point in both cases for high school graduates and those people with associates in, you know, some college. Those are big changes.
You see, I hope your ears were burning yesterday as I was driving one of my clients to see another client. Of course, he was all over me about politics. And I said, you know what I've learned from my friend Carl is if you take a 20 or 25-year plan on these numbers, be it inflation, be it unemployment, rarely, maybe with Obamacare there's a little bit of a change there, rarely can you even tell where one person walks in and the other person walks out. So you're saying that Joe Biden, Trump, Clinton, anybody along the line really didn't do all they said they were going to do for the middle class?
Well, so I am, from the data last month, 500,000 people who were high school graduates and had some college experience or an associate's lost jobs.
Okay, that's not so good.
500,000. And about 300,000 people who had no college experience at all or a bachelor's degree got hired.
So
that's where your -230 in the household survey. That's how it balances out against the poll books, if you will.
So we picked up in UPS and Amazon, and we lost in Papa John's, and we lost anywhere else. So I'm going to say what if you could put an average on it, we lost a $25 job and picked up $10 jobs.
You lost $25 jobs, you picked up $10 jobs, and you picked up $100 jobs.
Okay.
Right. But when you look at like the people that I used to employ, when I ran MCS in Chicago, those people got screwed.
And they seem to be getting screwed monthly.
Well, this is since the pandemic started, this recovery has been fairly even. I mean, there's been more gains here and more gains there from month to month. But to see both ends of this get some gains and everybody in the center get hosed, that is a very bad sign going forward.
Well, what does it mean? We have a person who is very dear to the show. She just was hired, which is great because she's terrific. Nice place, good, you know. They're talking about June, where she might actually go into the building the first time. I mean, Carl, as this gets extended out, they can say what they want. I mean, I know I'm being a old Luddite here, but they can say what they want about working from home, everything is the same. No, it's not.
No, not at all.
Not at all. I mean, there are places that, I mean, I think you and I know, I mean, Audrey has friends of hers that are in like the liquor business, and Audrey's in the real estate business. Well, there was a time when people were dumb enough to say that, okay, Audrey, you got to show up in the office. Of course, now she has her own firm, so she doesn't have to do anything she doesn't want to do. But there are people that said, drive 10 miles into the office for a 10-minute morning meeting and then go do your work, where she'd have to get back in and pick up a client 2 miles the other side of her house. But I think you and I would have known that was pretty stupid all along, right? So, I mean, there's some of that is a positive for people that sort of work at home or on their own no matter what anyway. Not having to check in, I think it's probably more positive. But I think you start running out of those people pretty quick, I think. Yeah, the idea that everybody's fine at home, I don't necessarily buy into. But one thing I do wonder though, Carl, a lot of what you do at your place, not you personally, is play around with other people at their place. And if they start laying off their people, you basically had nobody to play around with, so you're going to get laid off too, right?
Yeah, it's this, I guess the reason you'd see the market not immediately dump, 50 handles on the spooz on this would be that, of course, well, you know, this means that the government will come up with more stimulus. What else is new, right? But this didn't just miss expectations. This is a turd in a punch bowl, if you will.
Well, what I'm going to ask you, because I don't know the answer. If I did, my timing would be so much better. I guess I'd be amazingly rich and so would all my clients, and you'd be dying to be one of them. I've seen and read about governments essentially debasing their currency in an attempt to, you know, do all kinds of stuff, take care of people, whatever, right, inflate their currencies, so their debt they pay back less. And in our experience in the U.S., that didn't work. I mean, it worked for a while in the 60s where you ran the market up and it looked pretty good for a while as we poured money in the system and the Dow crossed 1,000 the first time and everybody was reasonably fat and happy. But pretty much right out of the gate, maybe because the Arab oil embargo caused it to come to us. It started to squeeze out in consumer goods right away. So you really couldn't hide the inflation, so you sort of had to do something with it. When you started pulling back on the money, then obviously we had problems. We had recessions and everything. But you look at other than that situation, the other times that I've seen it happen, well, early 68, clearly in other countries, you know, the Weimar, Argentina, Iran, Venezuela, as you debase your currency, you chase your assets, your stock market, to the moon. Where in the early 80s and late 70s, the market was basically flat on its ass. The rest of the times, it pretty much goes up. And now, that's what we're doing now. Because I think this time the inflation is in, mostly, like you bring it up all the time, is in healthcare, but most people, let's put it this way, the people that count, and I mean that when I say it, the people that count politically don't pay for their own healthcare. So it's easy to hide there.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
It's easy to hide there. Now, if some poor guy gets laid off from the building here, and he's making 40 grand and he's paying $1,500 a month with a $10,000 deductible for his family, that's horrible, but to be perfectly blunt, nobody cares about him. You and I might, but nobody else cares. Nobody gives a rat's behind. They can say they do, but they don't. And so it's been able to be hidden in property tax education. It's able to be hidden with higher education. It's in areas that people don't necessarily notice. It's not every time you buy gas, it's up 25 cents like it was in 71 with the Arab embargo.
Well, not yet.
Yeah, not yet. No, but what I'm saying is we've been able to hide it. Now, what has to happen? Are we going to be like Weimar where everybody goes broke and yet the market goes to a million, and it never happens? Or are we going to, one of these days, the Fed going to push it too far and somebody's going to wake up and say, hey, what the hell? It hasn't, because if I was on national TV, Carl, and I gave this story, all one of the attractive people there, male and female, would have to say, hey, Chief, if you're right, how come it hasn't happened yet? And I have no answer for it, Carl.
Well, I do, and that's that what we had happen with this virus and with the shutdowns and everything else is that we have had a collapse in energy demand. Okay, and that's primary energy. I'm not talking about the number of kilowatt hours that you burn in your house, but when you look at primary energy consumption has gone through the floor. Now, of course, the Greenies and the Green New Deal people love this because primary energy is mostly fossil fuels, right? One form or another. So the problem with that is that it takes energy to get that stuff out of the ground, and when you depress the demand for that, you also see a deflationary impulse that goes through the rest of the economy, and it's almost immediate. So there is no 6 month or year long thing like you see with monetary policy, or 18 months in some cases with Fed funds changes. It shows up right away in the producer price index, and then a month later it shows up in the CPI. And that has been held down for the, most of the year, basically. Okay. But what you're now seeing is it's starting to show up in other places. And when that demand comes back, that's when the inflationary impulse is going to show up, and it's going to be multiplicative instead of additive, just like it was on the way down. Here's another interesting thing. The average hours worked on both goods producing and private service producing were both down a tick from October, November. That's 500,000 jobs of equivalent.
Wow.
Okay, that is one of the numbers that nobody ever pays any attention to, but that's a 500,000. Every tick in that indicator, the average hours worked, is good for between both goods and services. Of course, most of our economy, 80% or so, is services. But
that is good for a literal half million jobs.
Well, how quickly does that in the reports? I guess, well, the PTI, I don't know, my brother Dan probably does. We're not hourly or anything like that, but if you're the Dunkin' Donuts girls years ago, well, a couple years ago, and the state raised their minimum wage, of course, they walk in, the coffee was 20 cents more the next day.
Right.
Like, why? We raised the minimum wage. Well, then, of course, you know, the girls dug us. Now we never go there because they don't open until 6. It was in there, nobody was in there one day, and it goes, Chief, they didn't tell you. They had to raise our salaries, but instead of working 8 hours now, they're kicking us out at 1. We only get 7, so right back we started from, which is pretty ugly. How quickly does that make it into the system? And I know Walmart, well, I don't know. I've had people tell me that, you know, that in my day, if somebody said, hey, I make $5 an hour, you immediately go to 5 times 40 and you're making $200 a week. But that's not today's world. That was my world and maybe your world, but it's not today's world. Where somebody will go, no, Walmart, they say if it's really slow this week, they'll say take Friday off. Well, how do you plan? How do you even know what kind of apartment you can go get if they're doing that to you? If you can't,
well, you don't, and that's a huge part of the problem is that you've got this, this time clock management thing that goes on in businesses nowadays when it comes to hourly employees, and it makes any kind of forward planning because, you know, let's face it, you and I, everybody else, all the ordinary proles out there, you sign a lease, it's for a year, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what do you do if you can't make the, you know, it's like you were talking about earlier. Well, you know, gee, we got this back unemployment check that we were owed. That's really nice, except that I'm sitting in the middle of the street because I couldn't pay the rent 3 months ago.
Did they deliver that $12,000 check under the bridge? Is there a post office box in there?
That's always, that's the thing. When people were talking about this earlier in the year, they're like, oh, this is not a big deal. I'm like, now, wait a minute. I've got a daughter. She's an adult. She lives with her boyfriend in Florida. And I'm like, excuse me. It took her 4 months to get what she was owed when she was forcibly laid off. It's a darn good thing that she's pretty good at cash management or she would have been living in the street.
Well, Kyle, when you help new businesses, which I don't do it formally anymore. I got so much work to do here, but, if somebody starts talking about a business and they're going to make hot dogs and they're going to deliver them here and they're going to get them here, when I ask some stupid question like, all right, now the guys you're buying the ground beef and stuff or whatever you're putting hot dogs, the guys you're buying it from, how soon do you got to pay them? Well, 30 days. Now the guys who are buying the hot dogs for you, how long soon do they have to pay you? 90 days. Well, you know, there's a problem. Why is that a problem? Well, duh. What do you do with the 60 day? But I mean, people don't think that way. I mean, and it's hard to get that financing now. I used to be able to get the financing. Now I don't think you can do that. But another quick question because you're good on all these subjects. When they start having foreclosure, moratoriums or booting people out, what do they call that? The eviction moratoriums. In the law, again, not looking forward to what happens. Is there some sort of a, if I don't pay my, if I got a 12 flat and all 12 people now stop paying me rent, does that follow through to me and I walk over to the bank and say, I'm not going to pay you my mortgage? I mean, it doesn't follow through at all, does it? I mean, I know it. I think it doesn't. I hope you tell me that somewhere in the bill, but I mean, I'm never going to get that back rent back, am I? I mean, in no way.
That's a good question. And the thing is no, it doesn't. And this is one of the problems that comes up with this, especially in the commercial real estate market where you're talking about apartment buildings and commercial buildings, retail, is if you have forcible moratoriums on the residential side, what happens to the guy who's holding the paper?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, that's where the rubber hits the road, and there's a dislocation in the mortgage servicing business that's going on right now as well, because if you're a mortgage servicer, you have to make the payments to the people that hold those notes.
Right.
Even though you're not getting any mortgage payments. What happens when Congress turns around and says, oh, by the way, we're just going to tack that on the end? So what? So now I advance that money to the people that hold the notes, but I'm not going to get paid for 24 years.
Yeah, you paid it all, maybe.
Well, effectively, I'm not going to get paid at all. May as well be never, right?
What about the taxes? So, there was no moratorium on those. I mean, actually, the Cook County here has said
then what happens with the taxes?
Well, Cook County's giving everybody something. I mean, I was going to say 6 months, but I think it might be three. They've attempted, but you still owe. So if you're not getting any rent, they give me a moratorium to health freeze over. You're not going to get the rent. How am I going to pay them?
Well, you know what that is they know what comes next. It's not then you have tax sales, and then the really bad things start, right? You have entire blocks that are vacated. There's nothing in them because the taxes are greater than the value of the property.
Well, that's when a few people make all the money because they buy up everybody's stuff at 20 cents on the buck. And that's
absolutely.
And that's the third time that will happen in our lifetime. It happened in Resolution Trust. It happened in 2008. It's going to happen again.
It's going to happen again. You betcha.
And that really kind of sucks, Carl. Carl, thank you very much. Better today even than usual. We had all kinds of good stuff to talk about. You're right. These numbers are weird. S&P Futures up 875. NASDAQ Futures up 14. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
No either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.